Back into another episode of the Adapt on Draft podcast. I am here with my co-host Dalton Miller. Dalton, you look like you got in a fight over Thanksgiving weekend.
I got the eczema thing going on, and I didn't go out in public today, so I just kind of left the nose strip on all day. So I didn't take that off. I sleep with the nose strip because I can't breathe at night because I have a deviated septum. So laying down and trying to breathe is incredibly difficult for me. So I just left it on. I got the mustache going from November. I'm going to shave that off tomorrow because it is now December. But I needed to get a picture and send it to my buddy. We do a big fundraiser back in Portugal for men's mental health awareness over November. So I had to grow out the mustache for that.
I love it. I love it as well. It was a good weekend to not leave the house. Not only was it Thanksgiving, of course, so lots of good food, but some pretty fun games to tune into this weekend as well, all around college football that really shook up kind of what we had expected, certainly in one game in particular. But and now we sit just wondering how is this thing going to play out. So we're going to go through the slate a little bit. We're going to hand out our helmet stickers and we're going to get the hell out of here. So let's just dive right in, starting with that Friday slate, because there wasn't much in that Wednesday, Thursday slate. But starting with that Friday slate, man, the Georgia Tech game, I think that's the place we got to start. And how when Haynes King ran that football in with 5 minutes left in the game, I said to my father-in-law, I was like, I probably would have gone down if I were him. Because you make it a 14-point game with 5.5 minutes left versus a 10-point game with 3 minutes left, 2.5 minutes left. It's a 2-score game no matter what. Even if you don't score from that point on, I told him, I was like, I looked at him, I was like, he probably went into the end zone too soon. And then you saw him come over to the sideline and Brett Key kind of grabbed him the way like the head coaches grab their quarterbacks when they're trying to talk to them and they don't want cameras to pick up on what they're reading.
Yeah.
And I wonder if maybe Brett Key was saying the same kind of thing to him. Haynes King was a warrior that whole game.
Yeah, he was.
But I do wonder, it's like, I think I would prefer a 10-point lead with 3 minutes left in the game compared to a 14-point lead with 6 minutes left in the game. It's
tough. I mean, here's the thing as well, and you probably aren't thinking about this during the game, but college football wants Georgia to win that football game. I hate to say that, but like, we saw it on the next drive. That pass interference in the end zone was pathetic. On fourth down, you cannot. First of all, it's not defensive pass interference. It just wasn't pass interference. And second of all, even if there was even slightly more contact, even if it was a clear wraparound where he grabs, you cannot call that in that situation. You have to swallow your whistle and make the right play, make the right call. And this is just multiple times this year where I feel like we are hurting the integrity of the game with some of the calls that we have seen. I think that there is just, it's an incredibly difficult job because unless you have been on the field like that or right outside of the field like I have, for different occasions for college football, it's impossible, even in the stands, it's impossible to grasp just how fast the game is moving. And so being a referee is incredibly difficult. And there is a lot of incompetence when it comes to refereeing. But like the LSU, I keep going back to the LSU South Carolina game, this game, you see these calls every once in a while for the teams, the big teams, the blue bloods, that you just know they're going to get these calls. They're going to get the benefit of the doubt when these other teams aren't going to, these scrappy teams who are trying to pull up these upsets. or pull off these upsets. And I truly believe that Georgia Tech deserved to win that football game. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like they gave it up. I feel like they were absolutely boned because they should have had that stop. And that would have essentially ended the game. Now, Georgia might have gotten two more offensive possessions anyways because they were going to try to run the clock out. You get a stop, you get the ball back, score, get another stop, get the ball back. Maybe you have a chance to score at the end to tie it up. But as soon as that happened, I knew it was happening. I knew Georgia was going to get the ball back. I knew that they were going to go down and score. I knew that it was going to go to OT. And it's unfortunate, man, because I really do believe that some of these games have been really, really awesome and great stories because we didn't think South Carolina and LSU were who they were at that point. And I think that if the SEC knew that South Carolina was going to be the much better team than LSU at that point of the season, I think South Carolina wins that game. And that's what is so fucked up about all of this. Even if it's subconsciously, I think they're not dictating games, but I think their biases are seeping into some of the things that we are seeing on the field.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen it, that flag they threw on Kyle Kendrick in that LSU South Carolina game. And we've mentioned it a couple times on this podcast. Like, it's literally an interception return. He's literally frame to frame, hands inside on Nussmeier and blocks him. The only way you would expect a defender to block a quarterback. And they threw a unnecessary roughness penalty on him and completely like that. One of the most bizarre. Going back to this game, though, I even thought that forced fumble the next drive after they scored the touchdown, Georgia scored the touchdown, kick it back off. Georgia Tech fumbles. That safety, Daniel Jackson, came on a blitz, forced the fumble on a third and short situation. That play was reviewed. They went to commercial break. They showed that replay a million times. I don't know if I've seen a crown of the helmet tucked further down than I have on that hit.
Yeah.
And they reviewed it. And there was no whiff of targeting whatsoever. And that's a situation. And like, should they have called targeting in a situation like that? No, probably it's probably as similar to the other situation that you're talking about, the pass interference. That's a situation where you do swallow the whistle, but they didn't swallow the whistle for Georgia Tech in the end zone there on the previous drive. And then to have it reviewed, and you couldn't tell me like if there's and that's where it goes back to like maybe the biases. You couldn't tell me if Georgia Tech forced that fumble on third and short.
Yeah.
That they wouldn't have like taken a good hard look at that. Like it's kind of those situations. And that's a little, we got into some conspiracy theorism there, but yeah, Georgia survives. Going to go to the SEC. I mean, they already clinched the SEC championship game before the game. But you go into the SEC championship game with three losses. You got to win that game or you're out of the playoffs. Now they're in, even if they lose it to Texas, lose that rematch to Texas. So, it was a fun game overall, eight overtimes. Jeez. But moving on, Boise State, Oregon State, Ashton Jante, 200 yards again. Wash, rinse, repeat. I think that's all we got to mention there. Two-man race for the Heisman at this point. Honestly, it might be a one-man race because the next game I got to mention is Colorado and Oklahoma State. And in this game, Travis Hunter had over 100 yards receiving and three touchdowns and an interception. Should have had a second pick as well. Had one go off of his hands, but a pretty nice pass breakup playing through the hands there. So I there's no doubt this guy's the best player in college football. And it's honestly laughable that he was not voted as one of the top three defensive backs in the nation.
Yeah, he's going to win the Heisman and he's not going to win
the Thorpe,
which is ridiculous. And listen, Caleb Downs is a freak of nature. But like we've talked about it before, Caleb Downs has another year. Xavier Watts, the ball production there, deserved. I think those two guys.
It was Malachi Starks. It was Jadae Barron, Malachi Starks.
I know. It wasn't even Watts. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like the ball production from Watts is there. And I understand Jahdae Barron has been great for Texas. But the ball production hasn't been there for him the same way it has for Watts. And Watts has done this for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. It's not a fluke with him. Malachi Starks obviously deserves it. He's the best safety in college football. and he's going to be the first safety drafted. But Xavier Watts is amazing. Mm-hmm. And he got his flowers last year, and he's having just as good of a year this year. Maybe not the ball production, because I think he had like 6 interceptions last year, and he only has 4 this year. But he had another one that was called back for penalty this year. And so, like, when I watch, and I am a little bit biased because I do watch this from an NFL draft perspective as well, and I love Xavier Watts, and I love Travis Hunter. But, like, those two guys, in my opinion, deserve it. And I think Jonte Barron's a great player. I think he's going to be a great safety in the NFL. But I don't see how you watch those 5 guys and come to the conclusion that those should be your 3 finalists. I just don't. And especially Caleb Downs, who has another year to go and is probably going to have just as good of a chance to win it next year, if not better. But yeah, I mean, when I was watching the live updates for the Heisman odds during that Colorado game, and I kept seeing it was just more and more and more getting into the negatives for Travis Hunter. It was like negative. It was like minus 150, minus 300, minus 450, minus 1,000. Like, it just kept going up the entire game. So I think he's going to walk away with it. I think that it's deserved. I think that a lot of people don't realize, not even just from like a cardiovascular perspective, how impressive that is. But in one of my buddies, I had people over to watch the games this weekend. Something we hadn't thought about. He plays in Boulder, Colorado. He's doing this at elevation, which makes it even more difficult. Mm-hmm. That just, we've never seen anything like him. And even if you want to say JT's having a historically good year running the football, he is. But we've seen better years rushing the football. We have. Barry Sanders did better. We saw a 2,600-yard season. He's been fantastic. He is the best runner I think I've ever watched when it comes to his all-around game. But Travis Hunter is the best corner in college football and a top 5 wide receiver in college football. And in the back half of the year, he absolutely lit it up from a production standpoint. He started turning the ball over on defense. He started scoring touchdowns on offense. He became a target magnet for them on offense, all while playing 130 snaps a game. He's the Heisman winner. Just is what it is.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's turned into this weird thing, as everything does on Twitter,
always,
where it's like, where it's like you have to slight one player for the other. Like, that's just like the trend. And it's like, oh, Ashton Jante has all of these things and Travis Hunter plays a lot of snaps.
Yeah.
And if that's, and like, what it would be so easy. To, that's the worst thing that I've ever, the worst bad faith argument I've ever heard in my entire life.
It would be just as easy to go the other way with it and say, well, Boise State's getting Jante the ball 30 plus times every single game. They were absolutely in the back half of the year padding his stats.
Oh, yeah.
100%. And very well they should have. Now, as a draft guy and a guy who understands running backs, I don't like him getting all of those touches because it's just more tread on the tires. But you just start force-feeding him the football to keep him in the Heisman race against a guy who's doing something that we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you can talk it down both ways. But I think that that's doing a disservice to both players
who are
unbelievable blue chip talents.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But in this Colorado game, Colorado blew Oklahoma State out to no avail, because BYU came up with the win against Houston and Iowa State came up with the win as well. So Iowa State gets that bid to the Big 12 championship game against Arizona State, who we need to probably talk a little bit more about, and not from an NFL draft perspective, because their team is so young, but the fact they're doing it with all these young guys, like, is pretty phenomenal. And I'm really interested to see what happens kind of with Kenny Dillingham here. He is an Arizona State alum, so I think they have some pull to keep him in house. But I think there's going to be a top 3 blue blood job that comes available here in the coming month or so.
Do you really?
I do. Let's go to that game. What wrap up Colorado? Shador Sanders, his stats were really shiny. I thought overall he was kind of late getting the football out for most of that game. I also thought they were probably hunting Travis Hunter targets a little bit more in that game than they probably should have to pad his Heisman stuff as well. Shador was holding the ball for a little bit longer. Again, I think that played a lot into it. Really, he threw for 438 yards in this game, though, still. Took a lot of bad sacks, though. But let's just talk about Ohio State, Michigan. Let's just jump to that game. Mm-hmm. I think Ryan Day's toast. I think he has to be toast. The guy hasn't won. Ohio State has not played in a Big Ten championship game now in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State has not won a big game. If you want to count the Rose Bowl against Utah, where half their team opted out, Ohio State's team opted out. I'll give you that one.
They beat Penn State this year.
Okay, they beat Penn State. That's the every year. If you want to put your tally for beating James Franklin, who's also a notorious
player, I was going to say Ryan Day Ryan Day.
Let's look at top 25 opponents not named Penn State, and over the past 5 years for Ryan Day, and it's not pretty. I don't care what his overall record is. He gets absolutely zero credit for beating the crap out of Maryland and Rutgers and Minnesota.
Yeah.
And he gets absolutely no credit for that because that's the expectation. The expectation is also that you beat Michigan, and he hasn't done it in 4 years. The expectation is that you also win a Big Ten championship, and he hasn't done it in 4 years.
Imagine not beating Michigan with Justin Fields
this year
and C.J. Stroud. And...
Well, he did beat him with Justin Fields. That was his first year, but that was his first year
of Urban's players. That would have been his last one, yeah.
His second year was 2020, and Michigan canceled the game because of COVID.
Yeah.
And then he lost to with Stroud. He lost to with McCord. He lost to with Will Howard. Imagine losing that. Yeah. Losing that game twice with CJ Stroud.
Well, losing the game on Saturday is just abysmal.
Abysmal.
And it's so funny because it ended up playing out exactly the only way it could have for Michigan to win that football game. They had to make it ugly. They had to muck the game up. And you have to somehow sit your quarterback down and say, just don't F it up.
And he did, and still won the game.
And no. I'm talking about Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Because Will Howard, what has he done all year? He is taking care of the football. And you cannot drive the ball down the field multiple times and then in the red zone F it up the way that Will Howard did. Because those were not great defensive plays. These were awful.
Late on an out route
decisions.
You cannot
be late on an out route in high school football, in college football, in the NFL. Doesn't matter where you are. You cannot ever be late on an out route.
Mm-hmm. Even Michigan turned the ball over at the goal line. Michigan probably should have scored, should have beat it by two scores probably. Ohio State missed two field goals, chip shot field goals in this game as well, I should say, which looms pretty big too. Where Ryan Day is literally just looking on as his team is fighting players after getting their butts kicked for 60 minutes. And I could not think of a better encapsulation of the Ryan Day era Ohio State Buckeyes than that, where they're all running around looking like morons after the game. And he's like glazed over, just like taking it all in. It's like, that's his legacy. That is his legacy at this point at Ohio State. And I don't know, barring a deep run at the college football playoffs, which could still happen, but how much juice is that team going to have left? Like, how much buy-in is that team still going to have? They're still playing for something, so they could. But boy, the pride that team has to be pretty freaking low right now. Has to be pretty low right now. So we'll see what happens if they bounce back. If he wins one college football game as the 8 seed, is that enough? Keep his job, maybe. If he's a one and done, he's gone. They spent $20 million on that roster. $20 million on that roster this year.
Mm-hmm.
They brought back every underclassman, just about every underclassman.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it was ugly, ugly football, and they just were like dead set on running the football, even into the strength of Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant. With a banged up offensive line, with your left guard playing left tackle, without Will Johnson on the field.
Very safe to say Chip Kelly will not be getting any NFL coaching calls to be an OC this year.
No, no. And I would think that he was probably sniffing around. I would think he was probably sniffing around. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
Not going to happen there. Texas A&M. This game was a slop fest.
It was a terrible football game. I didn't get to catch any of this, and I wanted to watch the tape of this, but unfortunately none of the tape is actually up yet from this weekend. So I haven't gotten a chance to check in on this one at all. I actually did see a little bit of the first half, and Quinn Ewers did make a couple of really big throws in the first half of that game.
And then he tried to give it away in the second half.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I didn't get to see the second half, but that's kind of how the game I thought it was going to go, because at the end of the day, Texas A&M's offense, like, I just can't trust it with what they're doing right now. As talented as that defense is, it's so funny because there's so many of these teams that are like college football playoff, like right there on the edge of should they be able to get in or should they not. And there's so many of those teams that I cannot trust them. Offensively, I cannot trust them. Like, even Penn State is going to be in the Big Ten Championship, and you cannot trust that offense.
No.
It's...
In the second half of that game, Quinn Ewers threw a pick six to your boy Willie the Third for like 96 yards. Like, Texas was trying to score, and Quinn Ewers threw a pick six. Texas A&M's only touchdown of the day. Quinn Ewers fumbled in the red zone the following drive. Texas gave up a blocked punt, setting up Texas A&M deep in their own territory, into Texas's territory, and they couldn't score. Like, Texas did everything they could to help A&M get back in this game, and again, their only touchdown of this game was a Willie the Third pick six.
Mm-hmm.
Again, what's jarring to me with how much oil money that school has, playing in the SEC, playing in Texas, recruiting in Texas, a massive pipeline, is the complete lack of athletes they have on the offensive side of the ball. Their best receiver is like 6'6" and 220, and he moves like 6'6" and 220. Like, mm-hmm. That's their best offensive playmaker at wide receiver. Like, they don't have explosive talent, explosive athletes offensively.
And well, dude, it's crazy because like I kind of liked Moose when he was younger there at Texas A&M. I kind of liked him as their third guy. Anaya Smith obviously graduated, and then you had Evan Stewart, your only real juice on the offensive side of the ball, leave.
Do you know what quarterback would be great for what Colin Klein's trying to do right there offensively? Haynes King.
Man.
Who was their quarterback and transferred out.
Yep.
So, yeah, they just couldn't score. Marcel Reed, for the athlete that he is, just his arm is so subpar when I watch him live, and they just couldn't score. So they had a chance to get in the SEC championship game against a Georgia team that I think is pretty beatable. So we'll see if Texas can get him on the rematch here this time around. Maryland, Penn State took care of business. They'll play in the Big Ten championship game. Miami, Syracuse, 21-0 lead, out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle McCord on a day that Ohio State has an abysmal offensive output, throws for 380 yards and 5
touchdowns. And we've kind of talked about this. There are two Kyle McCord. There are two of them. There's the Kyle McCord who, there's a reason why that guy was the starting quarterback at Ohio State. And then there is also the Kyle McCord that is, there's a reason why he had to transfer away from Ohio State. And those are the two Kyle McCords that we have gotten so far this year for Syracuse. He's had a lot of really, really good play. Like, we're talking, people talking themselves into him as an NFL draft prospect earlier in the season before a little bit of a midseason lull in the ACC. But again, this game, they took care of business. And this is one where, you know, usually when it's Miami and they're letting a team that is, you know, quote unquote lesser than them stick around, it's usually because their quarterback is kind of allowing that to happen. But as you said in the pre-show meeting, Cam Ward kind of
he did played, what he needed to
played
do
well in this game. Like, yeah. And Xavier Restrepo did his thing in this game as well. And it was just one of those where the flaws in Miami's team, which is
trenches and all of their defense. Yeah.
Offensive trenches and their entire defense. And that's exactly what happened in this game. They just got outraced. Syracuse had the faster car in this one, and that's really all there is to it. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, we've talked about this earlier in the year, like college football is more fun when Miami is good. College football is more fun when SMU is good, and that's really cool. You need a bad guy, and Miami is a really, really good back, always a really good bad guy. Mm-hmm. But a Miami team with no defense is tough because, like, you think of the turnover chain. They have nobody on that defense. It's bad.
Bad. Do you think their season's over, or do you think they sneak in the back end of the college football playoffs?
I don't think they can. I don't know how you justify putting them in losing 2 out of 3. It's a bad football team.
I would agree with you.
I would.
Only one ACC school gets in. Like if SMU loses to Clemson, they're not going to get in either.
No.
So. No.
And I think even a 2-loss SMU team has a better resume than Miami does. Okay.
Both their losses would be against ranked opponents.
Yeah.
I agree. Man, brutal end for Miami after looking like they could boat race pretty much anybody early in the season offensively, just keep up with anybody. And they probably still can offensively. But, I mean, we talked about it week after week. The cracks showed as soon as conference play started. Yeah. Virginia Tech, they probably should have lost that game. Cal, they probably should have lost that game. Mm-hmm. Like, the cracks were there very early on in this Miami season. And it finally fell apart at the end. The wheels fell off at the end of the season. So
yeah. Real quick before we get to helmet stickers, we're already 26 minutes into this. But real quick, South Carolina Clemson, great football game from start to finish. Great football game. It was sloppy offensively. Thought Lenore Sellers made a lot of mistakes in this game. He also made every single person miss in this game. On his way to, I believe, like 166 yards rushing. Mm-hmm. So really fun player. Tough pick for Cade late, but Cade drove them down the field, and it looked like they were going to win that football game, or at least get a chance to tie it up, I believe. Were they down 2 points? Hold on.
They lost by 3, 17.
They lost by 3, so yeah, they had a chance to tie it up, and he threw the interception. I thought that he had a really gutsy performance there, especially late. You know, Cade's somebody who can pick up first downs with his legs. He's got a really good arm.
He'll be around. 2 5-star athletes, quarterbacks in this game.
Yeah, he'll be around again next year for them. I can't imagine he would get decent enough recommendations to go to the NFL. So, a little bit more development from him. He could be a Cam Ward-ish type where if he puts it together – it's a guy who has the physical tools to be a legitimate NFL draft guy.
He does. I mean, that dude probably runs a 4.5, and he's got an awesome arm, really flexible arm. I kind of would love to see him get out of Clemson.
I would love to see everybody get out of Clemson because I'm absolutely fine with their downfall.
For sure.
Not Clemson specifically, but Clemson's head coach for sure.
Yeah.
Let's get to helmet stickers.
Yeah, let's get to helmet stickers.
Yeah, let's get in and get these people out of here. You want to start?
Sure. I said that I was going to give a helmet sticker to a running back, one of my favorite running backs in this class, but I'm going to call an audible. And I actually am going to give it to Kyle McCord. I'm going to give one to a quarterback here, and I'm going to give a helmet sticker to Kyle McCord. Kyle McCord's going to be at the Shrine Game, by the way, in Frisco, Texas, where I will also be, and you will also be, I believe, if that's still the plan for you. So, we'll get to see him sling it around a little bit more. Again, we're talking about a quarterback who also led college football in interceptions. A quarterback that threw 5 in 1 game. Like, we are not talking about a clean NFL draft prospect. But man, he's not afraid to sling it. He's not afraid to sling it. And that's what they needed in this game and against, a Swiss cheese defense. But he found the holes in the Swiss cheese, especially outside of that second quarter, getting into that second quarter. Pulled them all the way back from 21 down to boat race Miami for 2.5 quarters in that game and upset Miami and probably knocked Miami out of the college football playoffs. So Kyle McCord's going to get my first helmet sticker on a day where the team that showed him the door fell flat on their faces.
Yeah, that is.
That's a tough look.
Honestly, he deserves a helmet sticker for that. Yeah. You know, mine.
But again, is, I'm sorry to interrupt. I do think it is a little clickbaity to be like to pull the Kyle McCord versus Will Howard thing out, because I do think Will Howard has been a better quarterback all season long. And yeah. And again, I think that's more an indictment on Ryan Day's failure to find a quarterback post CJ Stroud than it is about Kyle McCord, or would bringing Kyle McCord back, who threw the most interceptions at a conference that doesn't play defense, do anything better for Ohio State than Will Howard? No. I think Will Howard elevated that offense from what McCord could do.
Mm-hmm.
But the optics of this weekend in particular are too good to pass up.
They are. They definitely are. My first is going to go to somebody who I'm very upset didn't get a nod for the Thorpe Award this year as a finalist. Xavier Watts, the safety from Notre Dame, who had a pick six late in this game against USC. All of the guys that I have here are guys that I watched the game live. I haven't gotten to watch tape. I would have loved to pick Boston College edge rusher Donovan Ezeruaku. I believe you may have, because you did see him. But I watch Watts. It's tough to kind of evaluate safeties when you're watching a game live, but Xavier Watts is just so solid at everything that he does. He's such a gifted technical tackler. It looks like, even though he's a smaller guy, 5'11", you know, maybe 6 foot on a good day, 200, 205 pounds, really looks like he engulfs runners when he tackles them. It's like that old school form tackling that you just don't see very often anymore. And the only thing, in my opinion, keeping him from getting legitimate, like, round one top 50 discussion is that he is a pretty average athlete overall. I think that he's fluid. I think that he is explosive enough, even to play in the slot a little bit. He's been really good in man coverage throughout his career at Notre Dame as well. But he doesn't have that type of explosiveness that NFL teams look for in a safety to pick them in the top 50 or so, even though he's a top 50-ish player for me. But he is so good at everything that you look at him and you know this is a guy who's probably going to start for 8 to 10 years in the NFL as a split field safety, and somebody who, even though he might run a 4.6, is faster on the field because of how good he is instinctually and how good he is when playing things that are in front of him and how he sees the offense. So for me, Xavier Watts gets it because of the pick six, but I wanted to talk about him because he's somebody who I think is forgotten about in the pantheon of college football greats this year.
Yeah. I'd be interested in, he's one of those players like Keon Coleman, wide receiver out of Florida State, was one of these guys last year who everybody looked at his testing numbers like, this guy isn't an athlete, but all of his on-field testing metrics were like, this guy's play speed is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I'd wonder where Xavier Watts would come in and like play speed metrics.
Yeah, that's a good call.
And again, we've talked about so much range in the back end is so much more about anticipation than it is about speed anyway. And that dude is brilliant. It just fades so well. So Xavier Watts is a fun football player. And I mean, again, ball production like he has is not a fluke.
No.
That is evidence of a lot of film and putting yourself in the right place at the right time very often. Very second helmet sticker for you.
Yeah, go second helmet sticker. Yeah. Second helmet sticker for me, because we're going to stick with a Jim Thorpe Award snub. The biggest Jim Thorpe Award snub, because he should be the freaking
almost
winner.
Unbelievable. Yes.
Travis Hunter. He's getting a game ball. He's getting a helmet sticker. 3 touchdowns. Yeah, they kind of force-fed him the ball there a little bit in that game to get him over 100 yards, to get him those touchdowns. But he also had a pick in this game. He also probably played 150 snaps. I haven't actually looked at his snap count from this week, but you can pretty much pencil it in. The dude is just different. He's just different. He moves different. Instinctually, he's different. He is the best college football player I've ever seen. Just flat out, the best college football player I've ever seen. What he is doing, we will likely never see again. That's all I have to say. He's the most special player I think I've ever seen at the college level.
Yeah. We've seen variants of this, but nothing ever like this.
No.
In terms of snap count. I mean, Chris Gamble is probably the next closest thing we've seen. And it, even that's been 20 years ago, 23 mm-hmm. years ago, that we've seen Chris Gamble at Ohio State doing something similar to this. And again, not at the magnitude of this at all. I completely agree with you. Travis Hunter is going to win the Heisman. Again, should have won the Thorpe. Phenomenal pick. I'm going to go back to the Ohio State-Michigan game here, and I'm going to give a helmet sticker to Mason Graham. And I know it's not sexy to give a helmet sticker to a top five player in this draft class.
I just did.
That's true. You just did too. Mason Graham against, again, Ohio State's forced to play their left guard at left tackle. Their starting center tore his Achilles in practice. Their interior of their offensive line is extremely patched up. And Mason Graham took advantage of it. Again, the box score isn't extremely sexy. One total pressure in this game. But five stop tackles from a defensive tackle is evidence of a player. And against Ohio State, who was hell-bent on trying to establish the run into an interior that consisting of Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham, when you have wide receivers like Emeka Egbuka and Jeremiah Smith out wide, whatever. Against a team that was hell-bent on trying to run the football, Mason Graham was in the backfield time and time again, blowing things up. Some of the most impressive tape from a guy who I already think is, a top five player in this class. Very impressive tape in a game that means more, especially for a team sitting at 6-5 on the season coming into the game. Like, you're not playing for shit. You're playing for pride. You're playing for blood and guts against Ohio State. And Mason Graham put it on the line in this game. So he gets my second helmet sticker. Third helmet sticker, I am going to go with Donovan Ezeraku from Boston College. Because you can't deny 12 pressures and 4 sacks no matter how you get them. If you can count pressures on more, you need more than 2 hands to count pressures.
And 6 stop tackles too.
And 6 stop tackles. Like, that's a dominant game from Donovan Ezeraku, who...
He's getting a lot of love from a lot of people.
He is. I will be interested because I do think his ankles are a little stiff.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not there with him either. I think he's a really good player, but there's stuff with him that I'm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Against Pitt in this game as well. Geez, that's a way to end your regular season. 59 total pressures, 14 sacks. It's a pretty good year in your draft eligible season. So Donovan Ezeraku dominated against Pitt, played 73 total snaps in this game as well. I mean, Pitt was throwing the ball like crazy, so they threw the ball 56 times in this game, but 12 pressures, 4 sacks, 6 stop tackles is absurd, no matter how you slice it. And again, it's an NFL draft podcast. And Donovan Ezeraku is 100% a draftable prospect. Again, I'll watch the final, I'll make a final judgment on what kind of grade I will give him. But at the end of the day, I am all aboard letting fun college football players be fun college football players. And Donovan Ezeraku has been a hell of a fun college football player this year. So, he's going to get my last helmet sticker.
Yeah, I've kind of talked about him before where I think he just kind of stands on the sideline and they have a hat and he's got all of these pass rush moves in the hat and he just picks them all out. He's like, okay, I'll do this on the first pass play of the drive. I'll do this one on the second pass play of the drive. And he just has fun with it. He's one of the more fun college football players that I've watched. Not all of those moves are very effective. And it's also funny how his go-to as a 6'2" pass rusher is an arm over swim move. Because it doesn't always work all that well, but when it hits hard. So he's a really fun, unique type of edge rusher overall. Mm-hmm. My third is going to Nicholas Singleton, Penn State running back. Doesn't get the ball enough to normally deserve a helmet sticker. And then when you fumble on the first drive of the game, you probably also don't deserve a helmet sticker. But then when you have a 66-yard kick return, to set your team up early in the first half, right after you fumble the ball, you score 2 touchdowns in the game, You're one of the only guys on that football team who can catch the football. Now, he only had 3 catches for 17 yards in this game. But his explosiveness, especially on that kick return, was on full display. Mm-hmm. He also, I believe, had like 13 or 14 carries for 87 yards. 2 touchdowns, like I said. He got the ball into the end zone when they got into the red zone. Him and Catron Allen have been together since day one there at Penn State. And we've seen a little bit of back and forth between the two over the years. In year one, it was a lot of Nick Singleton. Year two, last year, Catron Allen got a lot more touches. And then this year, it has kind of swung back. But it's such a heavy rotation. They get Tyler Warren in the backfield to carry the ball. They bring in Bo Pribula to carry the ball on certain packages. They have 87,000 different formations and shifts and bullshit that they do with their offense. Their entire offense, because they can't just drop back and pass the ball, is a gimmick. They will, I mean, one of Aller's passes in this game was him, the center, and nobody else around him, and then 2 defenders running at him to take his head off, and he just threw the ball up and got lucky over the middle of the field that his receiver was able to locate the ball, and none of the 3 defenders that were there were. And when you have that type of gimmicky offense, you need to have something that you can hold your hat on. And I do think that is turning around and handing the ball off to Nick Singleton. That is having him and Warren in the backfield at the same time. Warren actually completed a pass in this game to Nick Singleton on one of those quick swing routes where it's kind of like an RPO where Warren can swing it out to him or he can run the football as well. They run that play a lot as well because they can't actually throw it. So big showing for Singleton to show some of that crazy athleticism that he has. If I were him, if I were a lot of people in that Penn State offense, I would get the hell out of there. And I think that he will be one of the first running backs taken in this class because of his athleticism, because of his all-around game that he showed in this one.
Yep, I agree. He's been your RB2. He's your RB3 now, right? He's been in that top 3 mix for you for a very, very long time. And again, grades are finalizing. We've already started to build our board. We'll probably go through 5 through 10 this week. So that'll be fun to get into that a little bit. But that's our helmet sticker episode. That's our recap episode. Until next time, we'll be back doing Dafter Draft and building our board later this week. And, you know, we'll figure out what we're going to do on Friday because we don't have a slate to talk about. Well, I guess we could talk about conference championship matchups for sure. So we'll be back later in the week. But for now, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast.